Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
4 o'clock hour is brought to you by our friends at Battleborn Injury Lawyers. We're on in Northern Nevada for this hour. You dial 766-1400. Up north, 775-766-1400 is the number. Hanging out, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Take advantage of the great menu down here, including the Nathan's famous hot dog. Also, some of the favorites of the staff, like the chicken wings, which, by the way, this is going to be crazy to say. Willie, I don't know if you're a chicken wing connoisseur.
Yeah, I love chicken wings.
But, the prices haven't gone down since January 20th. And around town, it's getting pretty rich. I talked about chicken fingers at a joint I was at about a month ago that were 10 chicken fingers for $36. I was at a place two nights ago, 10 chicken fingers were $28. Wings were upwards of 20 for six. They give you a healthy portion here for $17. So not often we come down to the strip and we're like, best price in town. But the Golden Circle has it going on with their food prices, their food quality. And you guys all know I love the local mocos here, the original and the Cajun moco. Big four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
On the... Hey, Griffin, do me a favor. Let's fade down the music to almost nothing. Thank you. Quote, after the Super Bowl MVP went out to Jalen Hurts, another Eagles player said, I should have had it. I could have had it. It's all good, though. That was Josh Sweat, who had 2.5 sacks in New Orleans, team-high 6 pressure, 6 tackles. He did get 4.5 votes for Super Bowl MVP. Hurts got the lion's share. Would you have a problem if you were the MVP and the quarterback of the team if a defensive player, whether serious or not, is like, hey, you know what? Maybe I should have been the MVP.
Were you asking me or were you asking Griffin?
Sorry.
I heard Griffin's name and then I'm reading with you, and I was like, well, this is Griffin's thing.
Would you be mad? Or does this show that they're a really good team that a defensive player can be like, you know what? Maybe I should have won the MVP.
It depends on the relationship that they have. We don't know behind the scenes, like, hey, they won the Super Bowl, that's great. But do they have, like, was it a shot at Jalen Hurts, or was it really that's what he felt?
I think he was pumping himself up. And let's be honest, Hurts did have an awesome game. The MVP of the game was the defensive line. If you could pick a whole unit, they were unbelievable.
I think the defensive line as a whole could have definitely gotten MVP. Just like we saw, what was in 78? Was it Harvey Martin and Randy White shared defensive MVP or shared Super Bowl MVP? I mean, that the defense itself could have got it, but the defensive line, yes. I don't know, I probably wouldn't be mad. I probably would be, hey, I mean, in reality, the defense was the story. The defense was the story by continuing to put the ball in Jalen Hurts' hands. That's what I felt.
Number three.
Willie, not only do the Raiders have a question at starting quarterback, but really the whole quarterback room, what are they going to do with it? Is there a backup you'd like to see brought to camp?
Yeah, this whole conversation with Aaron Rodgers and, you know, stories coming out that here are the potential landing spots for Aaron Rodgers, which I think we're going to talk about. One of the spots that was confirmed that he's visiting is Cleveland. Well, Dorian Thompson-Robinson has started for that team extensively, what, 2 seasons back? He was the number 2 on the depth. He dropped to number 3. If Aaron Rodgers was to go to Cleveland, why not have DTR come to Vegas? Why? Well, He's from Vegas. And, oh, his college coach for 5 years was Chip Kelly, now the offensive coordinator for the Raiders. Make him battle for the starting position, depending on what they do in the draft. But I think it's a win-win for everybody. Why not? I mean, considering the franchise we're talking about and all the moves that they have made the last several years, forcing Derek Carr out the door after he got Davante Adams here, the reason Davante Adams came here, who now they don't have either one of them, and the subsequent moves after that, what's the big deal? You're getting a quality kid at the beginning of his career. Everyone's talking about get somebody with potential longevity. Not saying that he's going to come in and steal the show and he's going to be turn around and be Jalen Hurts, but at the same token, you'd have a pretty damn good number two if you were to able to attract a big number one with familiarity in Chip Kelly. I don't see it being a bad move.
Number two.
So interesting rumors coming out of Jacksonville, maybe more out of Pittsburgh. Stories early in the week that Pittsburgh had called on the Jaguars to ask them if they would trade Trevor Lawrence. The Jags actually responded to these stories, reportedly saying there's no chance Trevor Lawrence will be traded, calling the possibility ridiculous. Trevor Lawrence is going to get traded. Why would they respond? If the rumors are ridiculous, why would they even respond? And my reaction to that is the Raiders better get on the phone and kick the tires on a possible trade for Trevor Lawrence. Shouldn't they at least try to see what the price is?
Yes. If that's the case, yes. He's well worth it as well. I like Trevor Lawrence. I was never anti-Trevor Lawrence. I just wasn't on board with Trevor Lawrence. Came out in the same class, high school class, as Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Justin Fields. They all went to that Elite 11 camp up at what's the town in Oregon where Nike's the headquarters? I don't want to misquote. Beaverton, Oregon. And Justin Fields won it. Trevor Lawrence finished sort of low in that. DTR had a good showing. Nevertheless, I think he's kind of proven himself. I don't think as much of the failure of the Jaguars falls as Lawrence as far as it's the supporting cast around him. And, you know, with the coaching staff that the Raiders have assembled, Pete Carroll has assembled around him, I think you definitely have to kick the tires on that.
Number one.
Okay, so we've been talking about Aaron Rodgers going bye-bye from the Jets for most of the week. All things indicate that he wants to keep playing. So early in the week, Willie, I put together a list of likely destinations and things that would have to happen with those teams. They'd have to make some changes, but where Rodgers could land, where he'd actually want to land, mm-hmm. with a team that has a chance to win 8, 9, 10 plus games. Mm. From 5 on down, I had, or 5 up to 1, I had Niners 5, Seahawks 4, Steelers 3, Vikings 2, Raiders 1. I said teams like the Browns, the Titans, the Saints, and the Giants would be out of the mix because all those teams kind of suck and don't have a chance to get to probably even 7 wins. What do you have a problem with in either one of those lists?
The fact that you say these teams suck, so Rodgers wouldn't agree. The Raiders suck.
Well, I think the Raiders have, with the defense they have, and now a new head coaching structure. I would also consider this. I think Aaron Rodgers is an absolute handful, and if there's any chance of him being insubordinate, then your organization, if it's not equipped, shouldn't be talking to Aaron Rodgers. I do not think Aaron Rodgers would come to Las Vegas and be insubordinate to Pete Carroll and Tom Brady.
Neither do I, but the Raiders haven't proven themselves with this new regime, this new coaching staff. So your phrase, these teams suck, so Rodgers wouldn't agree. Giants, Saints, Browns, Titans. Right now, it's all talk. It's all talk. Pete Carroll, he built this, and I just said all that with DTR, but he has a relationship with Chip Kelly. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, and who knows what poison Devontae has put into Aaron Rodgers' head about this franchise. I like the Niners idea, because what if they can't come to terms with Brock Purdy? Now all of a sudden he's out there.
Yep. He's basically a rent-a-quarterback. If you believe that you can control him, he's a rent-a-quarterback for a year or two while you get your ducks in a row for your future quarterback.
Is this the right town for Aaron Rodgers?
Why, is there ayahuasca available on the streets? What
I don't
else?
Know. I don't
what,
know.
What other perilous dangers are there here?
I don't know. I'm just asking.
You know, that boy Aaron Rodgers loves the ladies. That could be a dangerous trait here in Vegas.
Does he?
Look at his track history.
Mm-hmm. Colin Cowherd is trying to build a case of Matt Stafford getting moved by the Rams and the Rams bringing in Aaron Rodgers as their rent-a-quarterback. What's the likelihood of that? That they move on from Stafford and they're like, hey, Rodge, you can be our guy for a couple years. And you would think Rodgers would be very interested in playing with the boy genius, Sean McVay,
It could be done. That relationship could be done. They won their Super Bowl, right? And the Stafford-McVay relationship, I mean, not that it's bad, but it's run its course. They don't come to terms. I could totally see that. Totally see it. Not about the Stafford to Giants part, but wherever he ends up, who knows? Maybe it's here. But Rodgers to the Rams, could see it. Those are two names, two teams that you wouldn't really pop into your head with immediacy because you're automatically going to think the teams that you listed. But, you know, it would not shock me. I mean, because Rodgers would be going home, right, if he goes to San Francisco. The Rams, I could see. McVay bringing in. Sort of just bolster the offense. Yeah, it's not out of the realm for me. I just don't know if Rodgers. I don't know if the personality is right for this town and that organization. We've talked about this year after year that stop blaming Las Vegas for certain things. It's not blaming Las Vegas on Aaron. It's blaming Aaron in Las Vegas. The things that we've defended this town against. I don't know if Aaron Rodgers comes in and it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good mix.
By the way, a quick update on the other story that emerged this week with the Jets and Rodgers, this assertion that, or demand from the Jets that he not do the McAfee show.
Yeah.
Rappaport said on NFL Network that did not happen. There was no ultimatum. But then he also quickly said it was part of a bigger discussion and that Diana Rossini did not get the story wrong. The ultimatum part was all done by content creators and aggregators, so he said it's their fault that's what that turned into, not Rossini's.
I'm going to tell you.
Which is kind of believable.
I 100% believe that. If that's, I mean, I'm not saying anyone's backtracking. I believe that because it's gotten out of control with content creators and aggregators, especially on where they can create 1 minute and 1 second TikToks or however long it takes on Instagram to make reels that become monetized, because I see it all the time. After the day after the Caitlin Clark and Asia Wilson jersey retirements, do you know how many videos I sat there and saw? I didn't sit there and watch them, but saw that were perfectly just past a minute so they could fall into monetization, and they were carefully created so they wouldn't get disqualified. Where it was like Asia Wilson blows up, absolutely upset with how Caitlin Clark the same day. That's not even true, but they went through, and then they have someone narrating the voiceover. It's horrible. So I definitely could see that took place.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Sports Reno.
All right, big weekend at Mountain West Conference Sports. We're going to get to the women's side in about 20 minutes. Talk some bracketology with Charlie Cream, but wanted to talk about the men's side. Good slate. Tom Mosser covers the Mountain West Conference. Has his Top of the Mountain podcast. He's up with Willie and Cofield. How are you, Tom?
I'm good, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me, Steve.
We're good. And it's been a really interesting up and down Mountain West Conference season. I'm not sure. I guess New Mexico would be the clear-cut favorite, but I watched New Mexico against UNLV here, and I thought they were good, not great. So I think it's going to be wild down the stretch and wild in the MWCT. Do you think New Mexico should be a heavy favorite for the tournament, or are you like me where you think it's pretty balanced?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm of the mindset that I would most times say that the team that wins the regular season tournament is unlikely to win the conference tournament. I just think it's when there's so much balance in the league, it's difficult to double up. You saw last year Utah State won the regular season. They didn't even make the championship game. Now, I know San Diego State's done it in the past, and that's fine. But, I mean, New Mexico at this point is playing the best basketball. But there's a handful of teams that can piece three games together to knock them off. So they'd be the favorite, but not wide favorite by any margin, no.
Well, let's get back to that in a couple minutes and just break down some of the games this weekend, and we can kind of go in a direction to wrap it up with the tournament. Tonight, Nevada's on the road against San Jose State. They beat them the first time around. This one's on FS1, and, you know, obviously both teams need to kind of string some things together here. I'm surprised, Tom, that Nevada's had the season it's had. I think they're a talent-loaded roster, but just no point guard.
Correct, and they may have misjudged some guys in the portal, and the sum of the parts just are not adding up for them, and they've been a disappointment. Now, I will say, despite the fact that it was only Fresno State, they did play really well Monday, and we'll see if they can kind of turn that the season around. I mean, look, it's too late for them to earn an at-large berth, but at this point, their goal should be just to be playing their best basketball for the tournament in a month to see if they can get that at-large bid. Oh, I'm sorry, the automatic bid.
Border War, CSU had a pretty easy time at Wyoming. Now Wyoming's at Colorado State, and you know what? Wyoming's been playing pretty solid basketball. I was impressed that the game I watched up close with the Rebels going up there beating them, but then Wyoming gave a handful to New Mexico, so maybe Wyoming can upset the apple cart and kind of screw up CSU's chances. CSU can't afford this loss.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, Wyoming, one night, like you said, they look great. They beat them at UNLV. They almost went at the pit the other night. But then they've had some efforts where they're just limited offensively often, and they try to slow the game down. CSU is very good defensively in the half court, and when they played the first time, they just kind of cut off anything that Wyoming wanted to do, and they kind of ran away with the game even though it was in Laramie. So I'm not saying they'll run away with this one here. I'd have a hard time seeing them losing tomorrow at home.
You know, I don't get a chance to talk to all the other content creators and media people around the Mountain West Conference, but one thing that I find is pretty interesting is that Wyoming isn't having a boffo season, but the compliments have been coming left and right for Sonny Wicks, their head coach. There's a lot of people who love what he runs.
Yeah, well, and that's – so, look, he got the job very late. Linder bailed out on them in, like, early May, which was pretty much at the end of the transfer portal. So most of the good players are already scarfed up by anybody. Add to that the fact that Wyoming's got virtually no NIL – and he had no roster. So it was more drastic than the Utah State situation last year with Sprinkle because it was so much later. So he had to put an entire roster together. They don't have a lot of pieces, and they stay in these games. Would they like to have a few more wins? Sure, but he's squeezing pretty much everything he can out of that roster.
Give me your take on the Runner Rebels. It's been kind of up and down streaky season, some really high point wins. Haven't been able to beat Boise. They should win this game tomorrow at Fresno, but what do you think of the Rebels?
Yeah, like you said, they should win. I mean, and you described it perfectly. It's been up and down, and frankly, it's been a little disappointing. I mean, they have one of the best players in the conference in DJ Thomas. You know, the Rob Whaley injury has certainly set them back because while Bear Cherry has been a solid replacement, it took a depth piece out. Whaley would have been a starter, and either they'd go two bigs or Cherry would be the sixth man. So it's hurt them there. You know, they've been in some games that they haven't been able to finish, and they just laid a couple eggs. And you can feel it there, I'm sure, the pressure cranking up a little bit on Kevin Kruger. And, I mean, in a season where the conference is good, but it's not as good as it was last year, there was an opportunity here, had they played well, to find themselves in the top three or four, and it just hasn't happened. So they have the talent to beat anybody. We've seen that. They beat Utah State, and they took the Mexico down to the buzzer. They just can't seem to put it together on a consistent basis, unfortunately.
Speaking with Tom Moser, Mountain West Insider, host of the Top of the Mountain West podcast. If there's one team, Tom, we approach March, first week, who's the sleeper that you feel could be dangerous?
So one team we have not mentioned yet, and this was my preseason pick to win the conference, and that was Boise State. They started slow. They had played really good basketball for the most of the last month. They didn't get their one loss in that last month, and it was on a virtual buzzer beater from CSU on the road, similar to their buzzer beater loss at Utah State, both on deep three-pointers that were contested. Take that away, and they did get blown out in the pit, but there's no shame in that. They're playing good basketball. We've seen this before with Leon Rice. It seems to get better as the season goes on. They have a couple very good players in Degenhardt, obviously a first-team all-conference guy, and Cardenius, the point guard, is having a very good year. So I think they're a team right now, we'll see, because they have a huge game tomorrow in Viejas, but they're a team that's trending up as we head down a stretch.
All right, what do you think will happen tomorrow at Viejas with San Diego State and Boise?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, San Diego State, I don't care what anybody, they have not played good basketball the last 4 weeks. They have not. They've been scraping by against the bottom half team. Now, you know, you can spin the narrative all you want and say, well, they don't get up for those teams and the other teams get up for them. But the bottom line is their offense does not look good. They don't have an alpha out there. They don't play the defense consistently for 40 minutes like a Dutcher or Fisher team you expect San Diego State to play. Now, they won the game in Boise. But again, that was 6 weeks ago. Boise was playing far worse then than they are now. So while it's tough to win in Viejas, I kind of think that the Broncos have a shot to do it tomorrow.
Sunday, Tom Oster is with us, Mountain West Conference Insider. Sunday, we've got Utah State and New Mexico. The first game was wild in Logan. Even game until about 10 minutes left, and then Utah State kind of just lost their freaking minds. The cool was lost, and it turned into a boat race. I don't think that's going to happen this time. What do you think? Lobos handle them easily again, or a tight game?
I think it's going to be a tight game for sure. I mean, look, it's easy for folks to look at it and say, oh, New Mexico won at Utah State, and they beat them handily, so now they're going to go home, and it's going to be an easy victory for them. But it doesn't always work like that. Like, oftentimes you'll see the team that got beat at home get one on the road in revenge. And it wouldn't surprise me if that happens, to be honest. I mean, Utah State's a streaky team the way they shoot the basketball. They run good offense. They space the floor out. But they're streaky shooters. And they were on fire the other night against CSU in the first half. They put up ridiculous numbers. They almost got to 100 for the game. And that's against a good Colorado State defense. And New Mexico plays good defense, too. But these two teams, they like to run. I think they'll get up and down. They'll make it a full court game. And I mean, obviously, you have the Pitt crowd is always a factor when they'll be loud and proud on Sunday. But I do think this will be a very tight game. So I will say that between the two big games, I think one of those road teams pulls an upset. Whether it's Boise or Utah State, I think we get an upset in one of those two games.
Mountain West Conference Tournament is coming up in just a few weeks. It's March 9th to the 15th. The women and the men at the Thomas and Mack. You can get your tickets at themw.com/2025. How many teams are going to come out of this conference and go to the Big Dance?
Well, I think the favored number right now, if there was a line in Vegas, would be 3. It's going to be very, very difficult to get more than 3. The only way that would happen is if the 3 teams in position right now, them being New Mexico, San Diego State, and Utah State all keep winning, and then somebody else wins the tournament. The problem is, like, you know, it's going to cause losses for those other teams, and there's very little margin for error. So I would say 3, and I would take that right now, to be honest.
I would be real cautious. If San Diego State can't get out of the round of 8, then there might just be 2 unless someone steals the auto bid from beyond the top 2 in the standings. One last question. This is Tom Oster's with us. This is a conference full of lots of good head coaches. Many of them have reached out and interviewed for other jobs often. Who's the guy most likely to move on for a job that they believe is a better job?
Yeah, I think my Lobo fan base is not going to want to hear this, but it's got to be Richard Pitino. He knows how to build a program. Great recruiter, and he's got the Pitino last name. And the more he coaches, the more experience he gets, the more people are going to compare him, as long as he continues winning, are going to compare him to his father, who's doing an incredible job this year at St. John's. And Miami's got an opening down there in Florida because Larrañaga passed it in a month ago. They have NIL money out the wazoo, and they're in the ACC. The ACC's been down a little bit, but I could easily see that being a match. I know Pitino likes it there. He's got things rolling. But, I mean, look, New Mexico cannot match the money that Miami would throw at Richard Pitino if they really want him. And I think, you know, he would be hard-pressed to say no to that.
I would keep an eye on Leon Rice if they don't make the tournament.
So you think he just retires and goes?
No. I think he looks to move on.
I mean, Leon comes from the Mark Few tree. Mark Few stayed at Gonzaga. Obviously, Gonzaga is a different animal, but I just feel like Leon is content there. Maybe, all right. I mean, that's an interesting one to watch. I haven't heard any whispers about it, but okay.
What I'm suggesting is the heat will be turned up pretty heavy, and I think Boise State fans should be pretty happy with what they have, but he does need to make the tournament, and they do need to advance a little bit. I mean, I wouldn't get rid of him, but I think there could be some heat around Leon Rice, and he may look to, even if it's a lateral move, just to start fresh somewhere else. Hey, Tom, we appreciate it. It's at Coach Mosser. Sorry we're up against it, but we appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
All right, Willie, so the celebrity game has started in the NBA, and before I get a I don't care about the game.
I do care.
Are you watching this?
No, I have Athletes Unlimited on.
Yes, women's basketball, sure. It is your beat.
Is it celebrity or is it the Rising Stars? Which one are you? Isn't the Rising Stars and the celebrities tomorrow?
The celebrities going on right now. They just did the introductions.
Oh, okay.
And it's Barry Bonds coaching against Jerry Rice, but they're turning the lights on and off. Like, it's dark in some parts of the court. Like, I know it's not supposed to be a super serious thing, but it's like strobe lighting. What is going on here? By the way, there's WNBA players out there. If I were a WNBA player or coach, I'd be like, put the lights on and stop strobing. This is weird.
If I was a WNBA, if whoever's out there for the WNBA.
Yeah, Rekia Jackson.
Rekia Jackson, which means she's in from Miami. Where's the All-Star game? Oh, it's up in San Francisco. That's right. Because Lee Strother and family are up there to watch Julian in the Rising Stars. That means that Rekia came in from Miami from Unrivaled while they're sort of on there doing their one-on-one. But nevertheless, if I'm a GM, I don't know if I want them.
Yeah. Willie, there's a mascot playing. Who was that, Rocky? Was it the Nuggets mascot? Like, he just jumped into someone. I don't know who. I didn't actually know who a lot of the celebrities were. Looking them up, I get it. But I'll give you the rosters in a little bit. I want to build on what I just said. Tom seemed really thrown off by the fact that when I asked him which coach could leave the conference or, you know, head for another job, and he gave the obvious guy, and that's Richard Pitino with the name, with the accomplishments. New Mexico's really, really good. He was in a Power Four conference before at Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But I threw out Leon Rice. Mm-hmm. Would you be shocked if he wasn't at Boise State next year?
No, and I love the reasoning because the way that you put it, you know, people would think the complete opposite, right? Success sort of breeds the individual spotlight, and so now's the next step. I love that when you threw it because I think Tom was thrown for a loop, and you're like, huh? What? You're like, well, if they don't make it, he's gone. Because at that point, it's kind of like I've done all I can here. So what's next?
I mean, he's pulled an 0-4 in the NCAA tournament. If they fall short of making the tournament, by the way, he's made three in a row. He's got Boise consistently. I think he's got 302 wins at Boise, which is an average right there at about 20 wins. But we've seen guys make lateral moves. By the way, Leon Rice could also get calls from other schools in the conference.
He could, but what about a lateral move to when I'm about to say these conferences, people are going to go, wait a minute, what? Why would he leave Boise State? Because there are conferences out there that have been just as much, if not more successful than Mountain West schools, such as maybe one of the best Horizon League schools, maybe one of the best Missouri Valley Conference schools.
AAC.
AAC. A lot of
money at some of those programs. Yeah. And so, I'll give you something else. Depending on what happens the rest of the way here, if jobs are open in Vegas or Albuquerque, I think Leon Rice calls on those jobs. For Vegas, it would actually be the third time that Leon Rice has called Vegas about the job. I don't think that's often reported in Boise, but he has had interest.
So you have Kevin. You have Kevin not here.
I do not have Kevin anything.
Oh.
I said if that happens,
if
I don't know what's going to happen.
I you see what I did? I pulled a Cofield.
Yeah, you turned it on me.
Yeah.
Which is fair. No, I don't know what the future. I don't know what they're going to do. Obviously, if they closed out and had
what year is this for him? Fourth.
Fourth, yeah. If he had a boffo end to the season and they actually did make the tournament, then we see. But my point is, like, a Bronco Mendenhall went from New Mexico to Utah State. You never know in the world of college basketball. Right? All right, we'll get you an update on the celebrity game and coming up in about 10 minutes. Charlie Kareem from ESPN, bracketology for the women's tournament.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
So we haven't had a chance, Willie, to break down a whole lot of women's college basketball now that NFL is bye-bye. It's been a good season. It has not been a season dominated by one or two figures. It's more balanced. A lot of West Coast power as well. Let's bring in Charlie Kareem, who does the brackets for ESPN. He's also a Vegas guy. He's up with Willie and Cofield. How are you, sir?
Good to be with you guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. I got a little gander at the UCLA-USC game last night. It was, I'll call it buried on Peacock. I have Peacock, but I don't know if everyone else does. Tell me what you thought of the game, and I don't know that there's major implications with the brackets, but fire away.
There really aren't major implications of the brackets just yet. Everybody kind of stays status quo despite the largeness of the game itself. But the game was rather remarkable when you're trying to analyze a basketball game that a team can go two full quarters with only one player putting the ball in the basket and still be able to beat the number one team in the country who hadn't lost all season long. That's what happened. The second and third quarters, Juju Watkins was the only Trojan to actually score a bucket, and they still managed to then come back late in the third, early in the fourth, and win the game. And her performance was otherworldly. It wasn't just the scoring. When she's making threes, she's a totally just a other part of the planet player, and she was blocking shots, like playing that second defender coming in late and blocking shots like crazy, and really frustrating UCLA. It was something to behold. It was a remarkable performance.
Yeah, she came close to having a triple-double with blocks included, 8 blocks on the night. And, I mean, I've had the pleasure of interviewing her since her freshman season. She's phenomenal, and I think that by the time she hits her senior year and decides to go to the WNBA, there's a good chance that there's going to be some records broken. I'm not going to start getting the conversation going where I have listeners and people calling me Caitlin Clark haters, because that's what people love to do when you build up other players. But Juju Watkins is that special. And we're going to see, we talked about last year how Caitlin Clark and that rookie class was generational talent. This next swarm of talent coming out of college is generational all over again.
Yeah, led by Juju. It's a wave of exceptional talent. It's going to change the WNBA in all kinds of positive ways. And Will, you interviewed her. She's also a fantastic, very humble, very self-aware kid.
Fresh out of high school.
That only helps.
Yeah.
She's marketable. That only helps what the next wave of players is going to be when you have someone that talented, but also, for lack of a better way of saying it, gets it.
Right.
She gets it.
No, she does. And she's carried the weight on her shoulders. And I'm going to tell you who's a special player on the opposite side of last night's game. And I've referred to this so many times. And I love the first time I ever got a chance to talk to Kiki Rice, because this was the number one recruit in the nation out of Washington, D.C. And I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't she go to Dunbar?
I think you're right. I believe she did. I think she did.
She had her pick, Charlie, of South Carolina, LSU. I'll go across the entire United States. She chose UCLA. When you ask her why, she said, I want to be the first person to bring a national championship to Westwood and make the women's program like the men's program used to be under John Wooden. That was her goal. Well, outside of last night's loss, I mean, this is a very dangerous team. I love the fact that USC and UCLA are right there in the headlines, even though they've gone from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten. I love the fact, and I love this for Corey because she's a great coach.
She really is. She's another fun one to talk to, who's honest, who's transparent, doesn't give you coach speak.
No.
Yep. So I think she's a real person with, you know, and you understand the real problems that the coaches go through when you talk to her, but also the real highs and how much it means to her to experience those highs and for her kids to experience those highs. So it's always, that's one of the, and selfishly, in a small piece of this, it's one of the real downsides of the Pac-12 going away was they started moving Pac-12 Media Day here.
Yep.
And I think, you know, Will, I know you used to go to that all the time. And being able to talk to some of these coaches, the Kelly Graves of the world are also fun people to talk to. Lizzie Gottlieb, the winning side of last night's game, fantastic to talk to. And we don't get that opportunity anymore or as often as we once did with the Pac-12 being so close. And now these teams are either in the Big 12 or the Big 10. It was weird. It was weird watching last night's game, even though we're three quarters or more through the season, sitting there watching this game of two of teams in the top six and realizing that they're playing on the West Coast, and this is a game for the Big 10 lead.
Yeah. Charlie Cream, women's college basketball bracketologist with ESPN, joining us at Cofield & Company with ESPN Las Vegas. I want to talk about Paige Beckers for a minute here. I've been watching some press conferences and her energy levels. I think somebody asked Gino about it. Just in general, how much have you noticed her body language, her demeanor, and is this season, is the attention, is NIL, is everything that comes with being Paige Beckers sort of wearing on her? Are you noticing that?
I am. I don't feel, you know, Gino has always described the way she plays as like she's like water. She just kind of flows, and she has an ease about her. And I haven't, on the court, I haven't seen that ease. And certainly you see it in her facial expressions and her body language that she doesn't necessarily feel as at ease as she normally does. I mean, I'm not right there. I'm not close to it. So who's to really say? But I think just from, you know, watching, seeing what we see with our eyes, hasn't been quite the same Paige Beckers, I think, since about, you know, the turn of the calendar, since we got into the new year. She hasn't been as efficient. She's one of the things she's obviously known for is her efficiency, her high shooting percentage, and some of that has gone away a bit. She hasn't been quite as on her game. She was one of the two favorites to win Player of the Year going into the season. She really doesn't have much of a case at this point. It doesn't help that UConn's playing in the Big East, which is really a really lousy conference, to be honest, outside of UConn and Creighton this year. So the games that she is playing well in, she's usually only playing into the third quarter, then coming out, they're winning by almost too much. And a lot of these games aren't getting on national TV. And the games they have had on national TV, they've lost, which, you know, also doesn't help. But you saw the Tennessee game.
Yep.
Last week, that she just didn't seem like herself. Maybe, I don't know, things are bothering her off the court if she's got too much on her plate, or that UConn hasn't had maybe quite the season. They're still a very good team, but haven't had quite the season that the team's expectations were, all of our expectations were, and maybe she just needs a reset button in the postseason. It kind of happened last year to some degree. But I think your observation is spot on, that it's a different energy around Paige this year at this time than even was last year.
Yeah, and I don't think that you mentioned the conference schedule and you know the caliber of play, and maybe it's not as high as it should be. So when you step out of conference in February and play Tennessee and they got a game against South Carolina coming up, that does not help a program like this that's normally used to high-quality competition day in, day out, week in, week out, and now is not. So who do you look at right now when you're doing your bracketology? Talk about the top teams. I mean, we could, anybody that's a women's basketball fan could throw them out there, but some of those sleepers, those mid-range 5 to 8 seeds that are going to be dangerous.
I think a team like, well, any team that pretty much comes out of the SEC this year in the upper half of the SEC is going to be dangerous to the rest of the country. The SEC is just that good. But a team like Alabama in particular, they shoot it well. They've got some veterans. They're definitely under the radar, but they've got a chance to be a top 16 seed, which would get them, or top 16 team, which would get them to be able to host first and second round games. So that, no, that gives you an advantage to the Sweet 16 potentially. So I would pinpoint Alabama perhaps is one of those teams. Michigan State's been a little bit up and down lately, but that's another veteran team. And I think you kind of look for that now, right? So many teams, even if they're veterans, they've had players that are brand new to their program because of the way the transfer portal works and everybody jumping ship and going on to a new roster. Michigan State and Alabama have players that have been there 2 and 3 years. And so you got to look at tournament time and the experience that's needed, the cohesiveness that's needed. And teams like that, I think, have a really good chance of surprising. But if I'm really being honest, I think this year there's a definite line of demarcation between the very best teams and the rest of the country. And I think outside of the top six, I'm not even putting UConn in that top six.
Right.
I'm throwing LSU and USC in with Texas, Notre Dame, South Carolina, and UCLA. I think the national champion and probably at least three of the four Final Four teams is coming out of that group.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I would really like to see USC and UCLA just to prove a point in terms of the Pac-12 power jumping into the Big Ten. But you have to pay respect to those other ones. I want to talk a little bit about the players. You mentioned Paige Beckers with Player of the Year. Once again, we're speaking to ESPN.com's Charlie Cream, bracketologist for ESPN with Cofield and Company. Charlie, you mentioned Paige maybe losing some points there for Player of the Year, but looking ahead past March Madness, the WNBA draft, Dallas picks one, Seattle picks two. Seattle picks up Lexi Brown from the Los Angeles Sparks today. They're saying Kiki coming in second, but, you know, I've been attacked on social media when I say Paige may not want to go to Dallas. I always say may not want to, but there's reasonings behind that. Could you see a reunion with Paige maybe dropping to two, making a deal to reunite with Nika Mule? And who do you see emerging, and how does that relate to Player of the Year voting as far as the top five or six? Because it's based on, obviously, team needs.
Yeah, it's funny because Player of the Year and top picks in the WNBA draft are really two different things this year, with the exception of Paige, because I think the best candidates for Player of the Year outside of her are players that are not going to be in the draft. So it's sort of interesting, which is great for the college game, because next year we're going to have Lauren Betts again. We're going to have Juju Watkins again. We're going to have Hannah Hidalgo again. I'm kind of with you. I'm not sure if Dallas is in a big transition stage right now, and I don't know that Paige would necessarily really want to go there. I also get the feeling, though, that Paige is the kind of kid that would like to take on a challenge. I mean, ideally, she probably wouldn't love going to Dallas where they're at right now. But, you know, you can't, with the right decisions, you can kind of turn things around relatively quickly if your front office is good in the WNBA. And if they can build something around her, then there's a chance. And I don't see her as a kid walking away from a challenge. I think if Dallas wants to take her number one, I ultimately see that she ends up there. But, you know, I'm not going to hang my hat on that necessarily, because I think there's a lot of things still in play. And, you know, Paige is one of those players and one of those kids that's pretty committed to the here and now. So you're not going to get much. You're not going to get much idea from her on that subject, I don't think, until UConn season is over. We're trying to read the tea leaves when looking in her eyes. I don't think you're going to find out much.
Charlie, last like 15 seconds. I see you have the Lady Rebels UNLV in an 11 seed auto qualifier. They don't win the Mountain West Conference tournament. They're not in.
It's going to be really tough. This is not quite as good of UNLV team as we've seen the last couple of years. They're going to be right out. If they run the table and get to the Mountain West Championship game and lose, I think they'd be right there. The bubble is really, really, really weak this year, so they might still have a chance to sneak in, but they're going to be right at the cut line.
At Charlie Cream up on Twitter. Charlie, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Always appreciate it.
There he is, Las Vegas bracketologist. He's the guy for ESPN on the women's side. Charlie Cream, 5 o'clock hour, is on the way. More updates on the celebrity game at All-Star Weekend.